I want a debate, and I'm confident that we can work out a time to do that.
The secretary is getting very nervous that poll after poll shows us doing much better against Trump than she is.
Kasich shouldn't be allowed to continue, and the RNC shouldn't allow him to continue.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:09 on this Monday, April 4th, 2016. Welcome to another work week. Welcome to another day. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. We'll start first with your overnight market intel from around the globe. From the WGN Market Desk, Asian stocks have kicked off the week higher. Investor sentiment seems to be boosted by the U.S. monthly job report, showing a sustained recovery in the labor market and a rebound in Chinese manufacturing activity. That report from China. On Friday, U.S. employers announced they added 215,000 jobs last month. That's a solid figure, but not enough to keep up with the new job seekers entering the market. Speaking of China, the manufacturing activity rebounded there in March to its highest level since late August. The Chinese news agency reports the Purchasing Managers Index came in up from February. A reading above 50 indicates expansion. It came in at 50.2. Benchmark U.S. crude oil falls below $36.50 a barrel. The dollar fell against the yen and the euro. This week, there's only one major government economic report scheduled for today, but a flurry of them later in the week. The Commerce Department today reports on factory orders for February. Tomorrow, there'll be two government reports, one of them from the Commerce Department and concerns international trade data for February. The other report from the Labor Department, it's the job openings and labor turnover survey for February. There's a developing international story today. An international coalition of media outlets has published what it says is an extensive investigation into offshore financial dealings of the rich and famous, based on a vast trove of documents provided to it by an anonymous source. The International Consortium of Investigative Journalism, a nonprofit organization based in Washington, says the cache of about 11.5 million records details the offshore holdings of a dozen current and former world leaders, as well as businessmen, criminals, celebrities, and sports stars. Demand for the Tesla Motors' new lower-priced electric car is high. Pre-orders are about 253,000. The Model 3, less than half the cost of Tesla's previous models. Morningstar's Dave Whiston says Tesla's got a hit.
Quite a while. This is not just a 2016 fluke. I mean, the vehicle won't even be delivered in any high volume until 2018, so you'll have orders getting met over 2018, 2019. And so with that, you can continue to meet demand. There probably might be some bumps along the way in terms of meeting demand, but at least that's a good problem to have for an automaker, rather than you make a car and spend all these billions of dollars to do so, and then nobody wants it. They don't have that problem.
The range of the Model 3 is about double what drivers get from current competitors in its price range, such as the Nissan Leaf and the BMW i3. An update from our program last week when we featured the Detroit watches and bicycles company, Shinola. Shinola has announced plans to open an eyewear plant on the south side of Chicago by 2017. No other details are available. The company has 14 stores and expects to reach 23 stores by the end of the year. The Exchange 2016 is this Wednesday, April 6th, sponsored by Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. Keynote panelists will explore social impact for modern-day business success. The panelists include Stephen Dime, the CEO and co-founder of Flowers for Dreams, Jacques Panis, the president and CEO of Shinola, and Calvin Jin, CFO of Blue Plate Catering. Blue Plate Catering is Chicago's first green-certified caterer. We're very pleased today on The Opening Bell to have Calvin with us this morning. Good morning, Mr. Jin. How are you?
Good morning. Great.
The success of your company speaks for itself. You have about 1,500 events on your calendar each year, the largest employing about 1,000 workers. You're building a new headquarters in the Fulton Market. Things seem to be going skyward for Blue Plate Catering. What's the secret to your success?
I think, you know, it starts with leadership and our owner's vision, and that percolates throughout the entire organization. People are very important to us. And so I think that's a big secret to what makes us successful.
What is the reason behind going green for a catering company like yourself, like Blue Plate? Why is it important to be a green caterer?
I think a couple reasons. First, you know, about a third of the planet's food goes to waste. And I think Jim Horn, who's the founder and owner of our company back in 2009 and 2010, thought to be more socially conscious and be a better citizen of the planet, we needed to take a look at our own practices. And at that time, we hired a sustainability coordinator and really evaluated our environmental footprint and pursued becoming a green caterer under the Green Restaurant Association.
I'd like to get in more about what that actually means and what it means on a day-to-day basis for your company, Blue Plate Catering. Again, we're talking with Calvin Jin, the CFO of the company. You can find them on Twitter at Blue Plate Caterer and online at blueplatechicago.com. We'll continue our conversation here on The Opening Bell.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, Asian stock markets kicked off the week higher on news from this side of the Pacific. The U.S. monthly job report showed a sustained recovery in the labor market. On Friday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 107 points to 17,792. The S&P added 13 points. The NASDAQ Composite Index gained 45. More flights are arriving on time, and airlines are losing fewer bags, but more consumers are griping about air travel. Traveler complaints jumped 34% last year to the highest level since 2000. Top frustration, cancellations and delays. Honda is recalling 160,000 subcompact and sport utility vehicles in Japan because of defective power steering. The recall does not affect any Honda models sold in this country. Expect to see a lot more electric cars on the road. Pre-orders for Tesla Motors' new lower-priced Model 3 rose to $253,000 over the weekend. At $35,000, the 3 is half the cost of other Tesla products. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
We're back at 520 with the CFO of Blue Plate Catering in Chicago, Calvin Jin. Calvin, before the break, we were talking about where you stand and what you are all about. I'd like to get into more about the process of becoming a green caterer. What's behind it and what sort of things make you a green caterer?
Sure. Well, it's really led by our operations team. But some of the things that we do, for example, we have a pretty robust recycling and composting program that keeps 80% of our waste out of landfills. It's estimated about 3 tractor trailers full of trash per year is processed that way. We do things like use Energy Star qualified dishwashers, convection ovens. All the paper products used in our office are 100% recyclable. And one of the things that is a little unique for us as well is about 30% of the main dishes that we produce are vegan or vegetarian, which actually require less energy to produce than meat-based dishes.
Do you also source locally for some of the ingredients to your food?
Yeah, quite a bit. I mean, we have some pretty strict parameters on ingredients we use. We use very high-quality local vendors and products.
What is the biggest misconception in catering, and how has it impacted how Blue Plate has gotten to the point where it's at?
Yeah, I think there's a couple common misperceptions, and some start because there's such a wide variety of what we consider catering. I think a lot of people, when they think of catering, think of weddings and galas, and although we do a substantial amount of that business, most of our business is really directed towards corporate clients. So we do events like the Chicago Marathon. We do a lot of in-office feeding through a drop-off catering service that we started. I think people, depending on what their relationship is with catering, they can have a misconception about what it really is and the quality that is provided.
Do people try to compare caterers with restaurants and chefs, world-class chefs? And do you think that's a wrong comparison?
I think it's a great comparison. We love for clients to compare us against top restaurants. You know, our chefs are some of the best chefs in the industry. Some of them have worked at Michelin star restaurants, so we feel very confident in our culinary talent. We like to show that off.
There's also a challenge, too, for a catering company like yours, because you get so many different kinds of events. Like you mentioned, it could be from football related to, you know, a wedding or something else. There's a challenge there to try to get exactly what your client wants and do it with flair, do it within this parameter of Green Caterer, right?
Yeah, I mean, the process can be very challenging. It's the difference between, one of the differences between restaurants and catering is that at a restaurant, you get what the chef designs and how he wants the food prepared. In catering, we do it to the client's specifications. So there's a lot of collaboration that occurs between clients, our culinary team, everybody that works for us, really.
You also, along those lines, you bring in your employees a lot by encouraging them mm-hmm. to bring ideas and other things to the table. How big is that to your success?
I think it's a major part of it. You know, the owner, Jim, is very involved every day in the business. He's very visible. When we say open door policy, I mean, people can go right up to him and talk about the business or talk about what's going on. There's buzzwords in the business today used like collaboration. You know, our business has to collaborate between every department or we can't produce what we need to do for events. So over the past year, actually formalized that process more, where we have a number of action teams throughout the organization working on pretty big initiatives, and that includes people from all parts of the organization. So we have part-time employees to full-time employees working together on rather large initiatives for the entire organization.
We mentioned in the intro at the opening of the broadcast that you were planning on building a new headquarters in the Fulton Market. Talk to us a little bit about your plans and why did you choose that space?
Yeah, so we've been in the West Loop for over 20 years. It was important for us to stay in this community. Actually, when we started looking for property and talking to some of the community groups in the West Loop, they were very concerned that we may be leaving the community and very much wanted us to stay. And so we conducted a pretty exhaustive search at the time when real estate values were really starting to increase in the West Loop. So it was quite a challenge for us to find a big enough property to handle the growth that we have planned. So first it started with that initiative of staying in our neighborhood. And we were fortunate enough to find a location at Fulton and Ogden that we're very excited about. It's under construction and we can't wait to move.
The Fulton Market, too, has a lot of good history behind it for the kinds of things that you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's known kind of as that meatpacking area. It's a neighborhood that's going under great transition right now. It's looked at as an innovative district. We believe we're a very innovative company. We believe that we'll fit nicely in that neighborhood.
We mentioned that sometimes you do 1,500 events a year, and some of those events, the larger ones, have more than 1,000 people working on them for Blue Plate. How important is job creation to Blue Plate?
I think it's one of the things that we're most proud about. I mean, I think, we're one of the few industries left where people can enter the industry on a part-time basis with very little education or even experience, and if they're willing to really put in the time and effort, develop a career. I mean, we have plenty of people throughout the organization that have been with us for a long time that started in various roles and have worked their way up throughout the organization. That's very important to our success.
Calvin Jin is the CFO of Blue Plate Catering in Chicago, the city's first green certified caterer. You can find them on Twitter at Blue Plate Cater and online at blueplatechicago.com. Calvin, thanks for being with us on the opening bell this morning.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
By the way, Calvin will be one of the keynotes at this Wednesday's Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce Exchange 2016.
WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's 5:38. Welcome back to The Opening Bell this morning. The question is, can we learn business planning lessons by going to the casino, a casino? Alistair Dreiber is with us this morning. He's written about this in Forbes. Good morning, Alistair. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve, and good to talk to you again.
Well, this is an interesting piece. You think there might be some lessons we could learn in business by throwing the dice and turning the roulette table, roulette wheel?
Yeah, most certainly. Now, I work principally with people who are doing new things, whether it's new products, new businesses. And what I've noticed is the whole business of new business planning has changed. There used to be an idea, and it wasn't altogether wrong, that you could decide what you were going to do and you could put together a plan and you could execute that plan, and most times you'd more or less get what you were planning. It was almost like you were planning an extension to your house. Whereas now, more and more, it's looking like a casino game, albeit a casino where the odds have been rigged in your favour. So, very different sort of approach. You can sort of understand it. It's really quite hard psychologically, though, and that's what potentially gives you the advantage, because if you can get on top of this new approach, you're probably going to have a lot less competition than you used to.
Well, you know, the casino is always a game of odds. Sometimes they're in our favor, sometimes they're not. If you play long enough, as you write, you could get rich, but you could also lose your shirt. Where's the happy medium here?
Okay, well, don't go to a conventional casino. What I'm talking about, imagine a casino where you go to one of the tables and you find there's something wrong with a wheel. Number 23 comes up twice as often as it's supposed to. Now, that's when you have the advantage. So if you play that wheel for long enough, you will get rich, as opposed to all the other games of the casino where you play. If you play long enough, you'll go broke. But a couple of things you've got to deal with. Firstly, you've got to decide how you use your stakes, because you're still going to lose 18 times out of 19. So you can't be putting all your chips on one spin, because you'll go broke before you get lucky. So that's the first thing. You've got to decide. You've got to play quite small. The second thing is, though, psychologically, and this is really, really hard, you've got to be able to lose 18 times out of 19, or maybe even have a losing streak of 25, before you start to win. And that's what makes this sort of game really quite hard. You know sort of mathematically, intellectually, that you're going to come out ahead, but psychologically it's really difficult to do. And I see these psychological difficulties when I see businesses trying to plan new things these days.
You write that venture capitalists are very comfortable with this routine, and the fact that maybe 9 out of 10 of their investments won't do much or won't go anywhere. So talk to us about how they're already sort of familiar with this, and maybe we need to get in their mindset.
I think we do. I mean, there are certain industries who get this. Venture capitalists are one. Hollywood studios are another. You know, you'd love every film to be a blockbuster, but you also know that's not what happens. Most of them are going to do maybe sort of okay, and inevitably there'll be a few turkeys, and then there'll be the huge success that pays it all back. Book publishers, similarly. So there are these people who are pretty cool with the fact that they're going to lose most of the time, but that's fine because they're really going to win big. But there are an awful lot of people who could benefit from getting into that sort of mindset who currently find that a real struggle.
And that's where the psychological part of this comes in.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
need to find that resilience, you write, to keep...
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, and it's psychological. It's within yourself. I mean, if you are running an organization, it's also important that you put out the right message to the people doing the work. So, you've had a string of 3 or 4 inverted commas failures, but, that's fine. Don't worry about it. Keep going, because that's the basis. That's the basis of our business. So you've got to take a rather different view within the organization about what constitutes a failure. I see a lot of old style organizations. It's like nobody will do anything until they feel almost certain it's going to be a success. But these days, that's more and more a recipe for never doing anything very much. But from their point of view, they're behaving rationally because they think, oh, if I do this new project and it doesn't work, I get whacked by the boss. Now, so if you're the boss, you've got to deal with that.
Yeah, and then also to keep losing on this path to winning, you know, that could be kind of a lonely road. How do you inspire others to be with you?
It can, yes, it can. And I think what you've got to do is send the message that, yes, it's okay, but, you know, take a good look at what you're doing. You know, you're not just taking any risk. You've got to say, okay, here's the project. We're going to do it. We think we've got an acceptable risk here, and we do it. If it works, great. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And maybe, you know, we look back and say, okay, it wasn't a success, but what have we learned from it? I mean, that's very important. You're not doing this blindly. It's not just like betting on a roulette wheel. Sometimes you may not have made any money, but you may have learned some really interesting, useful things for the next one. So that's one way of making the process a little bit less difficult, a little bit less painful.
And when
the
make-believe winner lands in the winning slot, that could open up all sorts of possibilities for the future.
Yes, yes. And every time you do something, you're getting closer to that.
Very interesting piece. Alistair Dryborough has written in Forbes magazine. We'll link this to you. You can follow Alistair at ACDDRYBURG and also at Forbes.com. Alistair, thanks for being with us on The Opening Bell, as always.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:48. Dow futures pointing toward a higher open on Wall Street later this morning. The Dow futures up 23. S&P and NASDAQ futures higher as well. Let's get the latest on commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Steve, good morning. As we begin the first full week of trade in the month of April, we're looking at a livestock market that ended lower in the Friday trade, with the hog futures falling to 10-week lows on losses in the hog price and dressed pork trade. That means that this morning, April lean hogs will start trading at $67.80 after dropping 55 cents on Friday. April live cattle, the only contract on my screen that was green Friday. The contract gained 7 cents to close at $133, but the April feeder cattle contract was down $1.32 at $155.75. The grain market last week saw, after that planting intentions report, soybeans and wheat did strengthen after those planting numbers came out. And by the end of the day on Friday, wheat, corn, soybeans all traded higher for the day, with May soybeans gaining 8 cents to start this week at 9.18¼. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. 5:50 now. President Obama's just wrapped up an historic visit to Cuba, and air travel between the U.S. and Cuba is about to take off in a big way. There are also new concerns about airline security following the Egypt Air hijacking last week. Let's bring in Rick Cini, the founder and CEO of FairCompare.com, based out of Dallas, on Twitter at Rick Cini and at FairCompare. Rick, in the wake of the Egypt air hijacking last week, is there reason for international travelers to be concerned?
I think there's definitely a reason to be concerned when you have two serious incidents, one with the Russian airliner and now more recently with an Egypt air flight being hijacked. Certainly something's up with airport security in Egypt. So I wouldn't be surprised if we actually see a travel warning to Egypt at some point. Now, a travel warning is, you know, advising you should you go or not, as opposed to a travel alert, which we've just seen recently for Europe, which says keep your head on a swivel. So these are both by the State Department.
Are there more places that are more dangerous to go than others if people have travel plans around the globe this summer?
Worldwide, there's actually a list of several countries that there's a warning or a very stringent one. You shouldn't be traveling there at all. Some of them are in Africa, a few other places as well. So the State Department has a very comprehensive list of all those, as well as we saw, for example, the difference between an alert is what we've seen in Europe, which is basically keep your head on a swivel, versus a warning, which we saw recently for Zika virus for pregnant women to a variety of countries, near the equator, the Caribbean, Latin America, and South America, for example.
I heard a a BBC reporter talking about the incident in Egypt, saying that the airport there involving this flight specifically, where I guess she took it regularly, that regularly people hand money to the security guards to let them through. That seems to be a major problem.
It's more than just a major problem. In fact, I doubt there will be any flights directly to and from Egypt into the U.S. With that kind of security measure, because we depend, as in the United States, we depend on our partners to have as heightened a security as we do, we have here, especially on inbound flights into the United States. You're going to see in Europe the security perimeter lifted out because of what happened in Brussels. You're going to see more armed people. You're going to see dogs further out, you know, in the hall where people are actually checking in, and even further and deeper out. You're going to see that in the U.S. too for the next several weeks. I would assume that this is something they're talking about, given what happened in Brussels, about extending that. Now, we did see after 9/11 some of this actually extended all the way out to the entrance of airports with your cars. I hope that never occurs here in the United States, but we may see that in some airports in Europe, at least in the short term.
It just seems like a couple of weeks ago you and I were talking about the need for patience this summer because of the security issues at some places, especially with spring break. You add this Brussels thing into that, and it sounds like it's going to be a nightmare summer for travelers.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be more complicated. You're going to have to spend more time. You're going to have extra time heading out to the airport. You do want to actually, anytime you fly internationally, it doesn't even matter if you're going into Mexico or Canada, there's what's called a program called the STEP program, which is a Smarter Traveler program where you register your itinerary with the State Department and all the emergency contacts on both sides. This is very useful, for example, when you have some sort of illness and you're in a place where they may not have an embassy, but they have a consulate, and they can help you out as well. So be sure and do that as a traveler. I'm heading out to Italy later this summer. I don't feel overly uncomfortable about doing that, and I think a lot of people have their tickets right now wondering what they can do if they don't want to go. Well, right now you're on the hook for those tickets already, and if people are planning on buying tickets, the ticket prices clearly are going to drop if we see some people start not going. With the dollar so strong in Europe right now, there's a lot of incentive for demand because everything over there is really inexpensive.
You know, depending on where you go in the world, I've not been to every airport in the world, but the international travel where I have gone is some airports, they allow people into the baggage areas after, you know, without going through security, you know, to pick up their families. Others don't. Do you think we might see some sort of change in policy with that after Brussels?
I think there's a lot of soul-searching going on after both Paris and Brussels on what to do in a variety of situations, especially at airports. We see this with hijackings in Egypt as well. So, again, they reevaluate all the time. And I'll have to admit, the first 5 years after 9/11, TSA didn't do a great job of getting people through there. But the last 5 or 10 years, they've done a great job of actually getting people through airport quickly and making sure that it's really complicated in the U.S. because we have 300 million Americans that like to fly. And, you know, it's really easier in places where we say, hey, wait, why don't we just have Israel security? If we had Israel security, we'd be waiting in line 4 or 5 hours here in the U.S. for every flight.
On to another subject. We've often talked about the crowded planes, the smaller seats, how they're packing people in. Did you see the new Airbus that was unveiled and how big and roomy that is?
Yeah, you know, Airbus has the world's largest airplane, the A380, which is basically a flying city, you know, depending on how it's configured, over 500 people. I think there is a trend both with Airbus and Boeing going to a little more airy design. They know that people are packed in. I know in some configurations they can really tighten things up, but they're basically creating these aircraft so that you have more space. They're much more attenuated because the people around the world in general aren't getting any skinnier.
Where are the bargains? Where can we go? What do you got good on your list?
Yeah, so I was looking in early May out of Chicago. Chicago's a great place to fly out of because it's a central location. You can get to the Northwest, for example, Seattle and Portland under $200 round trip. If you go down the coast some, also Los Angeles, San Diego under $230, and that includes San Francisco as well. If you're heading down to South Florida, Miami, Orlando, all under $200. And then in the Northeast, it's under $150 to places like Boston, New York, and Washington, D.C. It's one of the cheapest places to fly out in the country right now.
Rick Cini is the founder and CEO of FareCompare.com in Dallas, on Twitter at Rick Cini and at FareCompare. And just before we go, breaking airline news, just to recap, Alaska Air says today it is going to buy Virgin America for $4 billion. Alaska Air trading lower pre-market, the Virgin America trade higher this morning. This is going to be $57 a share in cash. Again, $4 billion, Alaska Air buying Virgin America. And that's the opening bell for Monday. Join us again bright and early tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock. Our show is produced by Mary Sandberg. Production help from Bennett Wakenight. Our engineer is always Ben Cortez. The Steve Cochran Show is next. I'm Steve Grzanich. Have a great day.